This is Tales from Agnes, 1972 flooding in the Chemung Valley, presented by the Arts Council of the Southern Finger Lakes to commemorate the 40th anniversary of the 1972 flood. Episode 2, Danger and Devastation. When Hurricane Agnes finally worked her way up the eastern seaboard, headed inland, and hit the southern tier of New York, no one predicted the destruction she would bring. Inundated with 3 days of rainfall, the rivers of the Chemung Valley overflowed their banks. Towns were ill-prepared for the coming flood, and some residents were trapped as the streets filled with dirty, surging water. Those who were fortunate enough to have found high ground watched from the hills as bridges collapsed and houses were swept off their foundations. The devastation was sudden and shocking. The survivors, whether downtown or on high ground, experienced a psychological toll that would never leave them. A torrent of surreal images emerged from the floodwaters, creating a bizarre landscape composed of the familiar and the alien. Today, we examine stories of flood survivors who recall their internal states of mind as the flood ravaged the valley. One man was 15 years old in 1972. On June 23rd, he was in Jones Court in Elmira with his girlfriend and the little girl she was babysitting. Having heard flood warnings on the news, they decided to investigate a nearby pond and creek.
We were kind of curious, so we walked to the brick pond just to check it out. And I didn't see anything that unusual. You know, the pond was a little high, but I'd seen it higher. And so we walked to Newtown Creek and walked down the dike ways, and the water was getting pretty high, and we decided maybe we better get back. Turned around and started walking back up the dike and realized that there was no going back because the water was on both sides of the dike.
Perhaps he had not yet realized the extent of the trouble he and his companions were in, but soon he would. Meanwhile, in Gibson, Tom DeWolf watched by the early morning light as the waters burst over the Corning dikes.
So my dad got all us boys up, and we went down and we went up on, now it's known as Cowan Avenue, but in Gibson it was called Grasshopper Hill. So we went up there and stood and watched as the dikes broke. Now the dikes broke into Denison Park, but before that, down the river came a couch. Then maybe there's a dog house with a dog sitting on top. Then an automobile. Then pieces of houses and almost whole houses from the Houghton Plot, etc., came down through.
Many who sought higher ground would see such bizarre images, but some saw them from closer quarters. David Forrest tells this story about being in the car with his father on Water Street.
The morning that it flooded the city of Elmira, my father, Dr. John Forrest, and I were driving down Water Street, and there was one car ahead of us, and we were approaching down by the old Elmira Savings and Loan building when all of a sudden I looked over to the right in the passenger seat of the car. The concrete wall that was down, you know, by the river. And the car in front of us pulled to a stop, and so did we. And as we looked over, we could see water starting to come over the top of the concrete cement walls that are still there in back of the buildings. And ahead of the car in front of us, the water was starting to rise up onto the street, and we immediately turned around and left and went back towards Walnut Street Bridge, where we got out. And one of the things we did was notice that the water was very, very high, and it was at the we stood on the dike, on the north side of the dike, city side of the dike, and the water was up at the top of the bridge. And I noticed a house coming down the river, and all of a sudden it was just like it hit the house kind of hit our large garage, hit the bridge, and it just split the roof in two and went down underneath it.
seeing whole houses, cars, and trees being swept away by the same river on which your city was built created a powerful impression of helplessness and isolation.
And what stuck in my mind was a big chunk of ground was floating with trees still standing on it. Downstream, towards the river.
The sense of helplessness and chaos produced by the flood is conveyed in the following story. Mary Ellis Chase, a nurse at St. Joseph's Hospital in Elmira, was boated from a staging area to the hospital the morning after the flood to aid in the evacuation and care of patients. She relates this boat ride and the state of the area in the following story.
After mowing around and one police officer saying that they thought they were going to fly us over to Broadway because they didn't have any medical personnel there, we ended up taking a boat to St. Joe's. We were loaded onto the boat around the area, I think, of Moretti's. We then get on the boats. We left. We could literally touch the overhanging streetlights with our hand. The water was so so deep. And looking down, it was very strange to see the everybody's cars down, you know, about 8-9 feet below where we were going. We got to St. Joe's and we got off the boat on the walkway between the medical arts building and the hospital. Just a little thing in between is that the boat that we had been on, because of the turbulence, capsized on its way back to the staging area. And as we were up there and you were laying on a bed, you could feel the force of the water make the building sway back and forth. And we looked out the window, and a home kitty corner from the hospital, about where the hospital parking lot is now, there was a home engulfed in flames because of we were told later, because of a gas leak.
The immensity of the damage wrought by the flooding was surreal. Houses stood in flames from gas explosions. Electricity and telephone service was severed. Every amenity that a modern community takes for granted was failing. In Corning, Barbara Dick experienced this from the Winfield Street School in the form of a bright, unreal vision.
But I do remember sitting in the school cafeteria sometime after midnight, looking down the valley toward Big Flats, New York, well, and seeing the Hickling Heights Power Station blow sky high. It just blew. It was such a bright, bright, bright picture. It was just, wow, I can't describe it. Humongous, giant, giant, giant fireworks.
Meanwhile, the young trio at Jones Court in Elmira remained in the thick of it and struggled to get to safety.
And we got kind of scared and walked to the old DL&W Railroad embankment. And just started toward the old DL&W station near Lake Street. And when we got to the Madison Avenue overpass, I was surprised to see the water not running toward the river like it was, but coming from the river. And I didn't realize at the time that the water was over the flood walls. And that kind of scared me. We looked north from the railroad overpass up Madison Avenue toward Lake Street. And I vividly recall seeing a manhole cover fly up out of the road. And, you know, I thought, wow, this is not a good thing. Realized that we didn't see anyone. No one knew where we were. And we didn't know if anyone was going to come get us or what was in store. I remember a fence there, and it had been hit by something in the water, and it was torn. And we came through the fence, and we were in about 4 feet of water and started down Dickinson Street toward Jones Court. And it would be normally a 5-minute walk. And it seemed to take for hours, but it was probably 20, 30 minutes. And I remember at times the water was chest deep, at other times, neck deep on me. And I had these two other people with me. And my girlfriend on my back trying to hold the little girl. And the only thing going through my mind was, I know this street, but where the hell are the manholes? Because I didn't know if all of them blew off when I saw that one. But we managed to make it to Jones Court. And to this day, if I see a manhole cover, I kind of try to remember where I saw it. You know, just in case.
Those who had sought higher ground were indeed fortunate, but their position left them with a terrible vantage point. Darby Webster, who was only 9 years old, was among those who witnessed their home surrounded by water from the hills.
And then, of course, when daybreak came, my grandparents lived at the top of Pearl Street. We walked out the door, looked down the street, and it was like we were on an island. It just was unreal. And we could see across the valley that all the water basically surrounded us. And at the time, we lived on the lower end of Watauga Avenue. So we went up the hill and down to Watauga, down to where Severn School was, and we could see my house from the drive that goes to Severn School. And the water was pretty much over the first floor, just at the bottom of the second floor. And just was surreal. Still to this day, I can smell the smells and just have vivid memory of, you know, the brown water. And actually, the newspaper that came out after the flood, I remember there was a photograph of me in there. I didn't know who I was at the time, but it basically the caption said, "Did he live on this street?" And that was me actually standing there watching people being pulled out of their homes by boat, loaded onto the hill. And that's just my story.
Each survivor of the flood has their own memories and visions from the catastrophe, ones that left a severe internal mark on the witness. Tales from Agnes continues next week with an episode describing stories of strandedness and rescue as community members rally to help one another. Tales from Agnes is produced by Trevor Worthy and Connie Sullivan Bloom in collaboration with the Arts Council of the Southern Finger Lakes. Special thanks to the New York State Council on the Arts, a state agency, the Community Foundation of Elmira Corning and the Finger Lakes, Caitlin O'Leary, and the dozens of community members who contributed their stories.